Part 3. The Titan Death. Chapter 23. Machine Dreams. There was wind upon her skin. The breeze was forge hot. From distant prairies of burnished brass came the scent of burned oil and heated metal. Her hair was a frizz of swarf that rattled in the breeze. Sharp and unsettling metal trees stretched down to planes of copper plates. Tiny metallic beasts ran through sharp steel grasses. Iron birds clattered in a yellow sky. In the forest, chimney pines trailed black smokes that caught upon high thermals, where they wound together in double helices, before smudging into a pall that smeared the light of sun into orange, lemon, and rich pollutant brown. Her body burned with a heat that was inimical to human life. Her heartbeat was a single moment drawn out forever, an inferno blaze with no sound, no pulse. When she uncurled her fists, her fingers were guns. Her feet were spread claws. Her eyes were glass. Children made of plasteel alloys crowded her legs, their undeveloped cannon arms reaching up for her, pleading for attention she could not spare. She ignored them. She had so many children she did not know their names. Their squealing war horns went unanswered. Her nervous oculi fixed on the distant place where metal met sky. There was something wicked on the horizon, and it was coming for them all. Movement caught her many senses. Infrared, seismic, sonar, aural, radar, lidar, and all the other machine blessings that were hers by birthright. Her sight was layered with many palettes, waiting to be selected, each promising the revelation of a different set of secrets. She heard sounds so deep they troubled the planet's molten core, and so high no living thing could perceive them. The tap of hoofs upon the ferrous landscape entered into her awareness. A clockwork horse, twice life-size, galloped past. It seemed to her no bigger than a toy. She recognized it with a melancholy so deep it threatened to drown her.
Hamaj!
When she called to it, her voice was the wordless blare of a war horn. The horse panicked. Exposed springs unwound quickly in its hindquarters, driving gears that drove pistons that slammed cast bronze legs hard into the ground. It galloped faster than any horse of flesh or blood could. It was not fast enough.
Hamaj!
The Great Mother called. Again her voice was the earth-shaking wail of war horns. Venting towers on the horizon spat fire in response. She forced her way through her squalling children, crushing trees to scrap. The horse fled, paws fed by syringes weeping a sweat of blood down its steaming flanks. She bent down and uncurled her weapon fingers to trap the horse. It switched direction, and she missed. Her enormous fist dented the ground.
Hamaj!
She cried. Another blare, polyphonic and mournful, blasted across the metallic world. Her hand slammed down again, this time in front of the clockwork horse, causing it to rear. Mohana reached to catch it, bullets from her fingers tearing up the rusty soil, steam whistling from pipes in her knuckles. Wild now with panic, the clockwork steed kicked and bucked. She tried to calm it, but her words were the uniform, aggressive blare of battle music. A finger touched its rear leg, a gentle caress that was deadly to the horse's delicate mechanisms. The leg broke. A spring unwound and burst free. Tiny cogs bounced across the wrought landscape in gentle, random musicality. The horse screamed. Its forelimbs sparked from the iron earth, but it could not rise.
Hamaj!
She blared. And this time the horns captured something of human speech, rising and falling the way the name should, though they presented no meaningful sound.
Mother!
The children wailed, their war horns now the flat-toned grind of malfunctioning servitors. She swung about, swatting them down in her clumsy immensity.
Great Mother!
Another voice, booming, human. It came from the sky. She looked up. The sun had gone. A black hole replaced it. The clouds were striped with ribbons of data, streaming towards oblivion. Within that void was something vast.
Great Mother, said the voice.
Non-functional. Synaptic disconnect. Neural network non-associable. Machine binding 70% and rising.
The second voice spoke not in words, but in the rapid pulsed screeching of lingua technis. She remembered eyelids. They fluttered. Sensation spread from them, outlining her face in the warm bath of preservative fluid.
She is waking, said the human voice.
Negative, said the machine.
No, she returns.
Mohana Mankata Vai awoke. Mohana Mankata Vai's dream was slow in fading. Double sight swam around her visual centres, the blurred white-grey nothingness of the amnion, sticky against her eyelids, slipped over a dropship interior, rendered in pin-sharp resolution by Luxor in Victoria's augers. The views fought with each other, neither of them finding the upper hand, leaving them both indistinct. A remote command suppressed her native vision with a painful jolt. To be so under the control of another that she could be blinded at will outraged her, and Luxor in Victoria, still inactive, grumbled in its sleep. There were many tech priests on the dropship hangar floor, and more upon a gantry crammed with machinery whose cabling snaked up into the Titan's head. She looked out solely through the machine's eyes now. The sense of her own body, never near, seemed far distant. Majus Principia Militaris Gotenmu Cassanius resolved himself in her optical sense. The Vox Omni Machina Malfor Chrysophane was at his side, rising and lowering himself upon his piston legs.
Rarely do I see both heads of the Legio's priesthood together. Matters must be serious.
Mohana tried for levity. Her voice was not her own, even slightly. The emitters on the Titan's head shouted every word without a trace of her modulation, removing any scrap of humanity. The infospheric patterns of the Magi betrayed their discomfort.
It is almost time, she said,
trying vainly to keep her voice to a human level.
It is, said Gotenmu respectfully. You are on the cusp of ascension. Your union with the machine god is not far away. I will dissipate into the manifold.
You shall be the first to become one with this Titan. You will forever be a part of it, said the Vox Omni Machina with religious awe. Your imprint will guide those who come after. No one else will ever have this honor. There can be only one who is first.
I shall still be dead,
said Mohana Mankata Vai. She paused.
I do not remember being deactivated.
It was an emergency precaution, said Gotenmu. You suffered a severe cognitive break when you learned of Princeps Esha Ani Mohana's wounding. Do you remember? You were on the wall at Hansu. Princeps Esha Ani Mohana was ambushed.
Another pause, filled with dread.
Is my daughter... Does my daughter live?
She lives, said Chrysophane. And she did you credit assuming leadership of the Legio while you were inactive. Although Majus Principia Militaris Gotenmu Cassanius has been taking all strategical decisions, and will continue to do so until the succession is ratified.
Until I am dead,
said Mohana darkly, enjoying the electric field of discomfiture spiralling around the adept at her bluntness.
How long have I slept?
She asked.
Weeks, great mother, said Chrysophane.
Weeks,
she said.
Then it is almost time.
It is, I regret, said Goten Mu.
And the war?
The war goes as it did, said Goten Mu. Hansu Hive halts. While we maintain control, the Chimist's C-Zone is safe, and Beta Garmin 3 will remain in Imperial hands. There have been several more attempts to attack from the south with enslaved regiments of Garmanites. The first took us unawares. The rest have been less successful. Engine loss is at an acceptable rate. Legio Astorum continues to repulse attacks from the traitors. Loyal forces destroyed the Iron Warriors siege battalion. Since then, the combat efficacy of our attackers has decreased by approximately 20%.
Shall I lead my daughters one final time into battle? Or do you wake me only to bid me farewell?
You are combat capable, said Goten Mu, while you are awake. Alas, we can no longer disconnect you completely from the MIU. If we were to attempt it, you would be subsumed into Luxor in Victoria for good.
No human can remain perpetually attached to the machine in this way, she said. I am surprised you have not already sent me on my way.
Great Mother, your strategic insight is invaluable, said Goten Mu.
Do you find my daughter unworthy?
She is worthy, said Chrysophane. Continuity is important in these terrible times. We value you, that is all.
And there I thought I was the inconvenient nub of flesh required to bring your idols to life,
Mohana said.
I sense nothing in the Legio infosphere indicating battle approaching. The ship does not move.
She paused, reaching further into the invisible web of data linking the Legio together.
We are still upon Beta Garmin 3. There is some other reason you have woken me. The question is what?
You are perceptive as ever, said Goten Mu with a small bow. A little over a month ago, the Primarchs Sanguinius and Jakatai Khan arrived at Beta Garmin. The Khan has committed himself to a hit-and-run campaign throughout the subsector. Sanguinius of the Ninth Legion has assumed control over all other Imperial forces.
Has he succeeded?
Asked Mohana Mencarta Vai.
To an extent, said Goten Mu. You appreciate the level of disorganization here better than most.
I do, she said.
He has had some success in bringing together Imperial war efforts, continued the Majus Principia Militaris. His vision for the campaign is taking hold. There are, however, difficulties he must contend with, not least dissension between the Titan Legios.
Dissension over what?
Sanguinius has commanded that the Beta Garmin system be purged of traitors. He wishes to retake Neocon City as the first action in stabilizing the war. If Beta Garmin 2 can be returned to the Imperial fold, then Horus may be driven back to the edges of the cluster, said Chrysophane. The Legios Titanica are split between those who wish to bring the conflict to a head and force a rapid conclusion in order to halt the attrition we have been suffering these last months, and those who wish to continue the campaign as it is. This latter group fears the scale of the attack Sanguinius proposes will result in their Legio's destruction.
You have woken me to decide what Legio Solaria's course will be.
It is not a decision I can make, said Majus Principia Militaris Goten Mu. Not without contravening the agreement between Tigris and the Legio Solaria.
Typically, you Magi cannot control that which you create.
With good reason, said the Vox Omni Machina. The Legio should remain apart from the factionalism inherent to the cult.
I will not transgress these sacred oaths, said Goten Mu.
What is your decision?
More data, she said.
Goten Mu's cowled head nodded at one of the tech priests, manning a station on the maintenance cradle. He inserted a mechadendrite into an interface port and twisted. A most audacious plan unfolded in Mohana Mankartavai's mind.
This is Lord Sanguinius's plan? A score of legios, hundreds of titans massed together to take back Neocon City?
The third battle for the system capital will be costly in blood and oil, continued Chrysophane. God engines were not made to fight each other this way, as infantry in an army of giants. The destruction unleashed will be unprecedented. Our legio is particularly ill-suited to this form of battle.
Plans, maps, diagrammatical representations, and more flooded Mohana's strategic senses. A scarred, ugly orb swelled in her mind. Beta Garmin II was ancient, inhabited by mankind for tens of thousands of years, and bore the scars of careless stewardship. Sanguinius's armies had the traitors boxed into various kill zones on the planet. The greatest concentration held the capital.
His legion will take the anvil, said the Magos Principia Militaris. We shall storm the walls.
As Goton Mu spoke, specifications of the city defences unspooled in the Great Mother's mind. Neocon City's mountainous hive soared up through Beta Garmin II's polluted skies. Its irregular base was followed with exactitude by a high, encircling wall. Graphical flourishes indicated many stretches had been repaired and enhanced by the War Master. The hive was heavily damaged from the previous two battles fought over it, but the wall had been strengthened with emplaced heavy guns torn from dead god engines. Her view expanded, taking in the star fortress of the Anvil, locked in geosynchronous orbit with the hive. At 300 kilometers above the peak, from the ground it would appear as nothing but a shape among many others, it being but one of hundreds of orbitals crowding the sky. But its armament could level the city, or destroy any attacker who dared to chance the defences.
If the Primarch fails to secure the Star Fortress, then we shall be helpless, said Malfor Chrysophane. We will die.
It is a glorious plan, said Mohana. Filled with risk, but bold.
As to be expected from the Great Angel, said Goten Mu. It is ruinous, said Chrysophane,
his machine warble becoming stridulous.
The projected toll in machines and personnel is staggering. We risk not only a few engines here, we risk the whole of the Legio.
Wars are not won through timidity, she said. How many other Legios have pledged their support?
Of the 27 in this sector of the cluster, 20. 3 are unable. 4 refuse.
You suggest, Vox Omni Machina, that we join this timid quartet?
I suggest prudence, Chrysophane rejoined.
Magos Principia Militaris Goten Mu, you are the strategist of your binary. What say you?
I defer to your judgment, Great Mother, he said. I will gladly calculate the best disposition of Legio support troops to enable you to achieve your end, for that is the role the Machine God has allotted to me. But I cannot and will not make this decision.
She allowed the play of data to run through her. It reinvigorated her, fresh as cold water, bracing as the rain, but in the back of her mind she still saw metallic skies and trees of steel.
I accept the Primarch's command, but a portion of the Legio will remain here under the command of Princeps Majoris Esha Animohana.
The number?
Asked Goten Mu, glad to be relieved of the burden of decision.
2 maniples, no more. I see the Primarch requires defensive forces to be stationed around the hives of this world.
A precaution, said Goten Mu.
He allowed his enthusiasm for the Primarch's strategy to show, now he was no longer responsible for following it.
The season of vitriol is on us. All non-Legio forces are reducing their operations. Only void-shielded units can operate.
Caustic fogs blanket the coast day round. Alkaline squalls are building into persistent storms inland. These have been known to trouble the world for months at a time. The meteorological conditions alone provide us with a fine defense, and will last for the next half year.
The War Master has the majority of his Titans defending Neocon City, said Mahana.
Therefore, he has very little offensive capability he can use on this sphere, Guten Moose said.
She surveyed the information again. The two Magi retreated from her consciousness for a time. She brought herself back before she was lost.
Send Esha and Imohana and Second Maniple to join the forces guarding the Diviner's Needle. Sixth Maniple will merge with the remnants of Tenth Maniple and add to the garrison of Caldera City.
As you will it, Great Mother.
Goten Mu bowed deeply, Chrysophane less so. The Magos Principia Militaris's infospheric profile broadcast his satisfaction. Mohana saw now that Goten Mu had been lying about his reluctance to make a decision. They had argued. Had the two been in agreement about the matter in the first place, they would never have woken her.
Make the rest of the Legio ready for transit to Beta Garmin II, she commanded. We walk for the Primarch. I shall lead my daughters into the greatest and most challenging battle we have ever faced. It is fitting I should end my tenure as Great Mother this way.
The Vox Omni Machina and the Magos Principia Militaris bowed again. A choir began to sing an exultant song of ultimate victory. Messages passed out through the Legio, telling all that the Great Mother marched to war one final time. Beta Garmin II was an ugly world. Though the capital of the system and the entire subsector, it was not the most populous. That honour belonged to Beta Garmin III, nor was it the most culturally significant, or even the most productive. A blasted, irradiated wasteland when the great Principia Imperialis found it at the beginning of the Great Crusade, it had latterly been given over to weapons testing. Every instrument of destruction below exterminatus grade had been unleashed upon its surface, from the humblest lasgun to the mightiest mechanicum ordinatus weaponry. Giant craters riddled its plains. Away from the inhabited equator, in the desolation zones, destabilization of tectonic plates had opened vast chasms. The planet's orbits were a crowded graveyard of decommissioned hulks employed for target practice. The only orbital of any strategic worth was the Anvil. It was a chilly, inhospitable planet, warmed unenthusiastically by the Beta Garmin star. The population clustered around its swelling middle in enormous fortress hives, the only legacy of the Dark Ages to have survived intact. But it was upon this inhospitable orb that power had come to rest. From Beta Garmin II, mankind had fought back against the cataclysms of the Age of Strife. Two great battles had already been fought over the fortress hive, the first under forces dispatched by Lord Dorn at the start of the war, when the Imperium had seized control from a small traitor garrison, the second when Horus's massed armies had taken it back. And now, in the true spirit of relentless escalation, Sanguinius's armada came to take it again. Blood Angel's fleet vessels cleared a descent corridor through the fields of debris surrounding the world. It was slow work, hampered by the danger of void junk impact as much as by the enemy. Defense laser fire spitting up from the hive fortresses obliterated more wrecks than it did active ships, and the Anvil, whose presence alone was once a deterrent against invasion, was silent, much of its capability lost earlier in the war. Suppression strikes against the largest batteries were launched from multiple craft in the Imperial fleet. Explosions flowered across the planet's dayside. Hives burned. The risk to civilians was paid little consideration. From orbit, the bodies of god machines brought low earlier in the war were visible against the uniform drabness of the surface, like the bodies of crushed insects. Towards these corpses, hundreds more war engines came,
Fresh recruits fed into the slaughter in a desperate push reminiscent of mankind's first bloody forays into industrialized warfare millennia ago. The Great Mother's dropship was down first among the Legio. All six dropships from the Artemisia deposited their cargoes gently upon the surface, their void shields sparkling under fire as they descended, and then again as they returned to the metal-choked anchorages of Beta Garmin II. Mohana Mankata Vai needed no time at all to interface fully with Luxor in Victoria. She slipped into its mind without making a ripple in its being, as unconsciously as an elderly human couple, long pair-bonded, might join hands as they walked. The idea of Mohana Mankata Vai was a ridiculous thing to her now. Only the Titan truly existed, her soul and its machine spirit together as one, though the sensation of control she had over the twain was an illusion. She was the iridescent film of oil upon a wide lake, soon to be stirred away into nothing, and lost. For the time being, Mohana Mankata Vai remained the guiding consciousness of the God Engine. To the honking blare of alarms and the spinning of warning lumens, dropship war gates fore and aft swung wide. Sickly yellow daylight battled the artificial glow of the transit beacons, followed by a far more aggressive spill of fine dust. It was already drifting inside the ship by the time, only seconds later, the retaining clamps snapped open. Fueling and data lines fell away from the Titans, and Mohana Mankata Vai's myrmidons exited with practiced efficiency. The Great Mother was last out, stepping into the gap behind her lead two bodyguard machines as the others came around the dropship to take up position behind her, framing her in a box of plasteel and ceramite.
"My daughters, look," she proclaimed. "Is this not glorious?"
Through lemon-yellow skies, the might of Mars's empire descended. Scores of Titan dropcraft were putting down under the cover of a suppressive bombardment that shook the planet. They floated down serenely, the effortless appearance of their landing belying the immense efforts needed to keep them aloft. Gravity engines put out a constant thrumming that, when produced by such a number of vessels, created a complex web of noise that wrong-footed the senses and shook the bones. Plasma jets roared with the outrage of captive dragons. Exhaust vents glowed hot. Daggers of blue fire stabbed into the earth when the ships came into land, turning it to steaming glass that landing claws shattered as the weight of the craft sank into the earth. Titans stepped from individual drop coffins, in maniples from larger ships, and in some rare instances, en masse as full demi-legio from the maws of giant, atmospherically capable conveyors bigger than the Artemisia or the Tantamon. There was debris upon the plain from millennia of war. Wind-scoured outcrops nearby could have been natural formations, but a cursory scan showed the reinforcement built into them. They were the pilings from long-vanished structures, of which now nothing else remained. Masses of metal beneath the ground were the buried remnants of battles fought at the height of the Age of Strife, while upon the surface, already being swallowed by snaking tendrils of sand and dust, were the blackened shells of armoured vehicles, fallen void ships and titans, all dead in the battles for Neocon City. The landing zone was well out of the range of the city's artillery batteries, and so far away, even the void-scraping height of Neocon was lost to the haze choking the air. Nothing but the passage of defense laser blasts was visible, dazzling flashes in the sky, heard as the sharp rolling of artificial thunder, felt through the inconstant fall of microbeads glassed from the dusty air. The Legio ships were under fire. Laser blasts chased them all the way down from orbit to the ground. Imperial Army and Legiones Astartes fighters raced among them, hunting down missiles aimed at the dropcraft. Further out, more aircraft duelled with enemy fighters, keeping them back from the landing zone. The defence could not be flawless. There were casualties. A coffin ship fell burning through the sky, slightly too fast, outpacing its stately, undamaged fellows, and breaking apart like a crumpled rations can on impact. The doors burst outwards, and the machine inside, already dead, toppled out. The greatest of all the Titans were the great Imperators. Of the many hundred god engines present, there were but three on the Loyalist side. War machines so huge they made the mighty warlord class seem small and pathetic. They were too large to be landed by standard craft. Two came down in dropships custom-built to house them. Though of differing designs, they were similar in appearance, bristling with weapons and decorated with the utmost care to glorify the machines within. The third Imperator had no ship large enough to bear it, so instead was suspended in a web of cables and brought down by a dozen labouring freight shuttles whose engines screamed in complaint at their burden. When the Titan's feet put down, explosive bolts attached to its limbs, Acropolis weapons and head blew. The cables slackened, whipped back under the shuttles, and were severed at the other end so that they fell like plummeting snakes to the sand, freeing the freight craft to ascend back into orbit. The last Imperator down was thus the first to walk. Its movement was saluted by a growing wave of warhorn song that repeated and strengthened as the immense doors to the other Imperator's dropships swung wide, and they too stepped out. These machines were the gods of the god engines, and were greeted as such. A path was cleared rapidly to the front, so they might walk by and be fated. Magna Bellifica, War Scorn, and Terror's Calling, of the Legios Astorum, Griffonica, and Ossidax, respectively. Whose colours they wore was irrelevant. Where they went, the machine god strode the universe in person. Warhorns sang different songs and different pitches for the Legios. Vox communications were disrupted by the storm and enemy action, and the melancholic calls of the machines were as much use as more sophisticated means of communication in calling units together. As the Imperators passed, the vocal salute broke up, and the Titans sang to others of their order to bring them into formation. First Maniple's dropship let out a pained roaring and began to lumber into the sky, its door shutting completely only when it was 100 meters overhead. The voids glittered in the sandstorm. Other ships from the Artemisia were revealed by its departure. Five more Maniples stepped out, each one reinforced by survivors of lost formations. Coffin ships disgorged more. At 50 god engines, Legio Solaria's presence was a mighty force by the reckoning of the Crusade, but having so many there was a painful reminder to Mahana Mankata Vai of what they had lost. The machines on the field accounted for most of the Legio's depleted strength. The stressed foxcasts of landing marshals urged Mahana Mankata Vai to clear the landing zone, and she obeyed. She was walking as the last of the Legio Solaria was still putting down, leading her daughters to their muster point and a gathering of Titans like no other before. No lesser troops landed with the Titans. A burning wind, rich with killing radioactivity and poison smokes, whipped across the dead plains. Landmines took the place of blades of grass upon this world. The Titans detonated them by the hundred under each plunging footfall. Anything smaller would have been obliterated. The landing continued as the Titans gathered. A score of liveries struggled to show themselves through mantles of accumulating sand. Blue, gold, red, green, cream, bronze, silver, white, orange. Their heraldries were as glorious as any force of humanity's history. Communications with the Strategos aboard the Red Tier were difficult. Vox boosting cut through some of the interference and jamming, but not all. The Legios were forced to negotiate with other Legios as they walked. They did agree on an order of march, surprisingly smoothly. The import of the battle was clear to them all. Now was not the time to argue. Mohana Mankata Vai sent her Venator maniples out to the right wing, placing them without qualm under the direction of Legio Ignis, who held that flank in force. She herself remained in the centre of the army, with other Myrmidon formations. They split themselves by type rather than by legio. Axiom maniples flanked the Myrmidons. Then Venator types sent packs of warhounds to the fore, bending the battle line into a formation like the head of a charging bull. Between the outstretched horns, a skirmish line of imperial knights 1,000 strong was arrayed, like footmen in front of mounted lords in a war between godly houses. Only to a Primarch's direct command would so many princeps and barons submit themselves so willingly, and then, perhaps, only to Sanguinius. By then, more ships were rising into the sky than coming in to land. Most of the Titans were on the field. Then they all were. The last few dropships scrambled their way back into the air. The final explosions of an unfortunate downed dropship sounded a starting cannonade for the army of giants, and they blared their war horns as one. When Mohana Mankata Vai gave the order, her voice was interwoven with those of 20 other Legio Grandmasters.
"Legio Solaria," she said. "Walk."
The Titans set out towards their target, their tread shaking the earth. 20 kilometers closer to the city, they found their enemy waiting for them.